Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. This is edition 206. On the broadcast today, I am going to be featuring a conversation that I had with Beatriz Paz, who works on an awesome food project called Duplomont Cajete, which is an ongoing research and arts project. And one of their current initiatives is exploring the ancestral and future significance of edible insects in Mexico. This project comes up in the context of the climate crisis and food insecurity, an insect-based diet as a possible solution to address the challenges on the planet around food production and pollution and emissions, and looks at this question from the context of a decolonial, anti-colonial perspective on food culture, looking to indigenous past knowledges and current practices around food production. And I think it's just a really awesome project, and I wanted to feature a conversation with Beatriz about it. So here is my exchange.
Well, I think first of all, you could just introduce yourself. I think when people conceptualize land defense and defense of indigenous cultures, the first thing they think about is probably not sound, but sound shapes so much of our environment. I know that your projects work with multiple mediums, but maybe you can just first introduce yourself and talk about the work that you've been doing recently.
Yes, I am Beatriz Paz. I live in Mexico City and I co-work with my friend Zoe Hine-Jones. She's from Toronto. And we work as Duplomont Cajete. We work in the nexus between art, food, and some activist perspectives on land defense through a Mesoamerican perspective, but also through an hemispheric perspective. And we are working currently in a project regarding entomophagia, which means eating insects. And we like to research, eat, cook, and talk about insects because it's a beautiful way to focus on the little things that helps us to talk about the big things such as climate change, militarization, corruption, and stealing of land.
So when we think about land and sort of the definition of like corporate agriculture, this has like deep roots in the Mexican context, particularly in colonization. And a lot of the context around how food is defined today is having a deep root in the colonial past. And the work you're doing speaks to that in a way. And I think it's really important to maybe also conceptualize this idea of like very like focused examples, which your work does, and how it's tied to this bigger picture.
Of course. Well, faced with the climate crisis and food insecurity, the FAO points out that in its 2013 report that an insect-based diet can become the solution of the planet's future alimentary challenge. So this is a solution that cuts across different epistemic systems like the millennial, ancestral, and the futuristic, the rural and the urban, the indigenous and the colonial, and the industrial and the artisanal. Let's say that more than 1900 species are eaten worldwide, and Mexico is the country with the widest number of edible insects. So while we run with the discourse that insects are the food of the future, for many countries, mostly in the tropics, insects are the traditional foods from indigenous people and has been since time immemorial. So how can this knowledge of transforming the food systems can be translated and scaled up to address the monumental problem of global food insecurity in the context of climate emergency without exploiting, again, indigenous communities that are actually protecting the 80% of the biodiversity in the world, and at the same time are being racialized archives in their own bodies and being attacked. How can we engage in this wicked problem without resorting to extra vast most of knowledge and disposition? And well, here in Mexico, we face a loss of traditional ecological knowledge because a lot of young people don't want to be recognized as brown. Mexico is a deeply racist country from my point of view, and that's why a lot of brown people is making the Prieto movement, which means it's a way to say brown here. And at the same time, the new tendencies of food and the super industrialized and processed food made a change since the enter of NAFTA and now USMCA. So the young generations don't want to relate with that and are adopting part of the racist rhetoric of eating insects or wild greens is yuck. There's a yuck factor that touches the eating of these insects. There's this researcher, is an anthropologist, an entomophagy anthropologist. Her name is Julie Lesnick, and she's from the Wayne State University. And she recovered an extract from some letters sent by Diego Álvarez Chancha in 1493. He was the companion of Columbus on his second voyage. And he's considered the first colonizing spy, which I think by itself is a great part of history, very sad as well. And he wrote this letter about the indigenous people of the Americans, and I'm going to read you that part. He said, they eat all the snakes and lizards and spiders and worms and they find upon the ground, so that, to my fancy, their bestiality is greater than that of any beast upon the face of the earth. And these stories contradicted Columbus' opinion of the native inhabitants, who Álvarez Chancha considered bad savages. And these points of view, exploited by other settlers, promoted the viceroyalty of New Spain's process of colonization of native land, people, and natural resources through evangelization. And now that we live in secular societies, maybe it's not evangelization, but it's this idea of the progress and the industry and gentrification. And the more you live in the center of the city, the more you proper you will eat, and you will go to the French cuisine, Japanese cuisine, and overexploit the resources that are not local and stational, and then all the local produces and all these ancestral foods are also being part of the racialized bodies and the process of miscegenation through racism and through the rejection of your own people, like in a self-colonizing way. And it's a problem for everyone that the world is being de-indigenized, because it indigenization doesn't only gives us another way to think about the world and more epistemic formulas to deal within ourselves and with the world and the nature and knowing where we live, but also is the last barrier. And that's very tragic, that the people who has been the most colonized and violented is the last resort we have to protect the world that we're destroying. So that's a double drama on them. And it's pitiful on us, I think. So the part of the process that we're living here and the way we try to research without being extractivist with these communities, because we go to rural communities with indigenous speaking people, and we live in Mexico, so we live in a contested territory by the narco state. Actually, the National Indigenous Congress calls on this as the capitalist narco state. So it's both. It's through the powers of international trade agreements and through the powers of what the paramilitary can do as the armed arm of the government when don't want to go through the legal path. So these two branches of violence accepted and enhanced and supported by the government are destroying the social fabric of indigenous people and taking their land, stealing their land. So we go to contested territories, such as the last ones were Oaxaca, Pinotepa de Don Luis, and we went to the autonomous Zapatist communities before the STLN launched their communique where they decided to change. But we went to Chenaló and Panteló, which are 2 and 3 hours from San Cristóbal de las Casas, and we saw a very, very heavy reality because we saw the drug lords, the National Army, the National Guard, the huachicoleros, which are gasoline thieves, and the coke major industry, because Mexico is the country which consumes the most of coke in the world, and Chiapas is the state that or the region where most coke is consumed in the world, based on an indigenous idea that blurping, like, expels the evil from your body. So when you drink something with gas, then you will blurp, and then you will cast away the evil. So the coke, based on this idea, made a super imperium there and stealed the water of the region. So it's a very agricultural area without water and surrounded by three cartels, which are fighting over the territory. And we came to ghost towns on a Tuesday, 11 a.m., and we saw the impact of, of massive shootings all around the town and to the house where we went to look for sats, which are caterpillars. There was a sicario outside the house the whole interview, and he was listening to everything we had to say, because in a ghost town, everybody can see that a new car with new people arrived to a house. So for the people who received us, this was, in a way, like making attention, and I wouldn't say putting them in danger, but they have to navigate and to deal with these things all the time. And we went to their milpa, which is the intercropping system from Mesoamerican descent, and is the bedstone of corn. Corn grew up in the milpa, which is a system that pretends or tries to emulate and cooperate with nature to create a new ecosystem, and it did successfully. So they have this traditional milpa in their house. I guess you call Three Sisters the base of the milpa, but it's more than that. And there we found several kinds of insects. And this woman, the woman from the house, who is a Tzotzil woman, she speaks the indigenous language of Tzotzil, prepared two kind of dishes with this caterpillar. And we ask this woman, we have two faces. We go there and then we walk the hills, we walk the milpas with indigenous people, even though we don't find the insects, because it's tricky, because there's a lot of factors around the possibility of being able to find one, like climate change. This season didn't rain, this season was hotter. It was unable for them to make nests. Or the narco came and we couldn't cross and the insects died. Or tourism came and it took it all and lifted up. So
you're describing this process of going to different regions and towns and cities where indigenous people are working to preserve milpa, so like the traditional agricultural system, in relation to also traditional food systems in relation to insects. So this is all taking place in the project that you're doing. So it's an art project. So I'm wondering if you can sort of locate what you're describing, because it'd be interesting to know a little bit about why you're going to these places. And if I can return to another point that you talked about, which was the point of these systems in relation to the protection of biodiversity, if you could try to like blend those two points.
Yes, it's an artistic project, and the way we choose the territories we want and the people we want to work with, or most accurately say collaborate with, is because we know them one way or another. In Oaxaca, the family that hosted us, or our friends of the family or the in-laws of my friend Zoe, so she and I were part of Dupla Molcajete, and in Chiapas is the friend of my cousin. So that's one first thing that we try to do. We try to go with people we know or who knows people that we know, because we cannot pay, and it's part of not being extractive. We cannot pay for the knowledge, either the time of these people, but we try to go to their communities, co-work with them. Of course, we give them money, but we make very clear to them that this is not a payment, because what they are sharing with us is not for sale and is not for us to take. And it's only a knowledge that can be situated for and by people who lives there. So it's important, because many of these people don't have regular incomes, don't have regular jobs. Sometimes they have multiple families with multiple children. They live in houses without what we would say proper floor. They live on the soil. So for them, it's an apportation that can help to their domestic household. How this relates to biodiversity? Well, it's just that, for example, there's a tree that is the house of very particular worms, but it's not an ornamental tree. It's not beautiful from the white or occidental perspective. So they cut it off in many regions just because it didn't look pretty. But by cutting that tree off, they destroy the whole habitat of a particular species of worm that was part of indigenous consumption. And that happens the whole time. Like transgenic corn, which Mexico has been struggling to ban it, and it seems that now we're in the process to do so. Transgenic corn contaminates the soil, and it's part of the deforestation of many rural areas. So that creates a drought. With the lack of proper humidity, many of these insects cannot survive and cannot reproduce.
So you're talking about like these fundamental issues about land and agriculture and colonization in Mexico today, and you're approaching these as an artist. But I'm wondering if you can talk about this moment in Mexico, because the context of the state is different right now in Mexico. You have a state that is in dialogue with some aspects of social movements. And so there's a lot of tension there, as opposed to a state that is in total war with social movements. That's a different context. And I think it's important for people to hear a voice of somebody on the ground who's trying to mediate things as an activist and an artist in that context. When you have a government that has made some concessions to social movements, but still, you know, things are not simple, right? And it's important to think about it, right? It's not just like in Bolivia, Evo Morales is elected and things change, right? Or, you know, the paramilitaries are thrown out of the presidency in Mexico and things change. There's a process. And I think it's interesting for people to hear about that.
Thank you. The first thing I would say is that I live in a very divided country. I've never seen or lived my country more divided as it is now, and it is inside the families, inside the groups of friends, and in the general society, because this government has polarized opinion. So saying that, whatever I answer, there will be other activists and other artists who think exactly the opposite than I do. And for me, this government is a disgrace, and it's a manufacturer of propaganda, like cookbook level, because it's pretending and washing us with the idea that it cares about not only reforming, it wants to go to one or a few steps forward, but starting with reforming some social processes. But I will say this is the government with the highest rate of disappeared people, murdered women, children, like I'm talking about teenagers with drug problems, the highest rates of suicide in modern history in Mexico. It's getting ugly and it's getting heavy. And it's pretending to make these justice plans for indigenous people. In the state of Sonora, they have four, because the indigenous people from the state of Sonora, I mean the Yaquis, have been the most fighters, and they don't allow any robbery to them or injustice to them. They've been fighting for centuries, literally centuries. There's a documented history of many governments trying to break their social fabric, and this government just did. And it uses political prisoners in a way to bargain the political terms of agreements with the communities. And it doesn't happen only in Sonora, it happens in Oaxaca, it happened with many political prisoners. A lot of indigenous fighters are political prisoners of this government. And the narco is or has been making demonstrations, like parades, with tanks on the streets and people like clapping on them in Guerrero and in Chiapas in the last 4 months. And everything that goes through the mouth of my president and many governors is like, everything's fine, this is because of the right conservative party, and this is because of the past and the havoc of the past. And this is a rhetoric that is making a lot of noise, because it's like cognitive confusion. It's gaslighting us. And most of people fall for that. Even people with a long education, a long time left approach and practice. And it's harsh. It's really harsh. And of course there are good things, because nothing can be like good or bad only. I can see good things, but for me it's just not enough. And I've talked with several indigenous people, and some of them will be pro, because they will say, it's just that no one helped us before with the resources we needed to manage our land or to sell our produce. And other indigenous people is like, I lost everything for this government. So it's very polarized.
So this is the context within which you're doing these interviews and doing research. You've been making zines, recording the sounds of these territories you're visiting. Maybe you can just say again your name and repeat the project that you're working on, the name of the project.
Yeah, Entomophagia, Future and Ancestral Foods, and is a project supported by the Canadian Council for Arts. And it's at its research phase. We go to contested territories of indigenous people to see how they live and how climate change and militarization is affecting their ways of living, including their relationship with insects and how these insects can help us trace the reality and the recent history of these people. And we're producing images in movement. We filmed in 16 and 8 millimeters in digital video. We record sound. We are writing about it. We have a domestic farm of mealworms. We take care of it. We host gatherings with food based on insects. And we talk as much as we can with people about the yolk factor and their ancestral heritage in the consumption of traditional food.
Thanks so much for talking today.
Oh, no, thank you.
That was an interview with Beatriz Paz, who is an activist, researcher, creator living in Mexico City. Beatriz works on a project called Dupla Moncajete, which is a project that looks at edible insects in Mexico in relation to the climate crisis and draws from indigenous knowledge bases around food production, alternative food production that has remained within indigenous cultures in Mexico that actually presents an opportunity to think differently about food today in the context of the climate crisis and the huge problems around the emission that agricultural food production, corporate food production often produces. So thank you to Beatriz for being on the program. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. We air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CGLO 1690 AM, also in Montreal, on Wednesdays at 8:30 AM, on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg at 10:30 PM on Tuesdays, on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario at 11:30 AM on Wednesdays, on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, BC on Wednesdays at 9 AM and Saturdays at 7 AM, on Met Radio 1280 AM in Toronto at 5:30 AM on Fridays, and on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Look us up through Free City Radio on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week. Take care.